Blog Talk Radio.
Stop. Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
If you're afraid of the truth, you're in the wrong place. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. It's Monday night, the 15th. It's tax deadline day. And so tonight we're going to talk a little bit about what we'd ought to be doing. And we're going to talk about the fair tax. I've been in some conversations with some friends this week about the fair tax. There's still a lot of real misunderstanding, a lot of misrepresentation out there of what the fair tax is, what it does, how fair it really is. And so we're going to deal with that a little bit tonight and maybe even start a bit of a series where for part of the night each week, we'll talk a little bit more about the fair tax, try to get some more education out there on that. Big fair tax rally coming up in Jefferson City. We'll be talking about that a little bit. Also tonight, we'll have Carl Bearden along, and he'll bring us up to date on the latest developments in the department scandal, the Department of Revenue, the scanning and maintaining of databases to send off to the federal government. We have had a breaking development in that this afternoon. If you haven't heard, and I'm sure most of you had, the head of the Department of Revenue stepped down, resigned. And so our next question will be, where do we go from here? And we'll talk about that a little bit tonight. What do we do from this point forward? How do we keep this thing alive? What do we do? You know, it will, of course, be the aim of the governor and his office to make this the end of it. The Department of Revenue head stepped down, and so it's over. It's done with. We've taken care of the problem. But the fact of the matter is the problem isn't taken care of. And so we'll be talking about what we need to do from this point forward. There's a lot we need to do, and we need a lot of help from our listeners. We need a lot of help from the Patriot community in Missouri to get this done. We're gonna talk about some get our feet on the ground programs and actually getting out on some of these hot spring days and working up a sweat to get some things moving. We're going to take just a minute now to remember, and I'm not going to belabor it. If you've watched any news tonight, it's all you've seen is that same explosion over and over again. But we're still not safe in America. We understand that there's a person of interest that they're looking at. There surely will be more. We're not going to get into the politics of it tonight. There will be time for that in the future. And we certainly will go there when the time is right. But for tonight, we just want to take a moment and think about the families of those killed in Boston. And we want to think about those who are hospitalized now with injuries from that explosion. We want to think about those people who were there and witnessed this tragic event. And we want to think about the heroes, the firefighters, the police, the first responders, the people who, according to all the news reports, were on the scene within 15 seconds. These are people who, if we want to flash back to 9/11, and we don't have to, we can look at what happened today. These are the people who daily risk their lives for the rest of us. And we thank them, and we appreciate them, and we take a moment now to think about them. So the president comes on, and he gave a speech today, and I love to spend this time bashing the president, but he did a good job today. He called Americans together, as a president should do, and he indicated that this was not going to be a party politics, as a president should do. We'll see to it, on the hour of truth at least, that it stays that way. If either side tries to make a party issue out of this tragedy, we'll point that out. We'll be truthful. We'll be as hard on either side if they try to politicize this tragedy. But at the same time, we'll be ever vigilant for what's being done for justice, and what's being done for the safety of our country and for the safety of our citizens. This is, after all, the hour of truth, and truth is what we're all about here. I'm going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the thing that's going on at the Department of Revenue. Carl Bearden will be joining us in a bit, and we'll open up the phone lines to you people out there listening, and we'll see what you have to think about any and all of any of this. You wrote the book with a movie in mind. An angel face with a criminal sight. Celebrated as a rebel kind. Outlaw.
How can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. I've
got a feeling that the tide is so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
And there it is. We're back. Secret Santa is on again. You people absolutely amazed all of us at Missouri Grassroots Coalition with your generosity last year. We doubled our goal. And we've set an even higher, harder-to-reach goal for us and for you this year. We start Secret Santa way early in the year because you know, and we certainly know, that November and December, the time that we start thinking about actually going out and distributing the Secret Santa funds, is the hardest time for us to come begging you for money. So the idea is that through the year, as you get your income tax refund, or as you get a little bonus, or as you find an extra dollar or two in the piggy bank, you'll send it on in. You'll go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and you'll check on the Secret Santa tab at the top. And you'll, while you're there, you'll click on the PayPal button and send us $2 or $3 or $50 or $100 or whatever it is you can afford. Now, before the holiday season catches up with you, as it catches up with all of us, every penny of every dollar that you send in goes to the Secret Santa. There's not a penny of any of the money that is donated that is used for advertising, or there are no salaries at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. There's all the advertising we do is what we do on the web, at our website, and at the Facebook pages we frequent, and here on the radio show. And several of the grassroots groups throughout the state promote it in their meetings and in their local areas. But it doesn't cost any money for promotion, doesn't cost any money for salaries, doesn't cost any money for distribution, doesn't cost any money for overhead at all. Every penny goes to the charitable cause that you are submitting money for. That's MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Check on the Secret Santa button at the top. There's a tab at the top, Secret Santa. Click on that tab, go to the Secret Santa page, read all about Secret Santa, and then click on that PayPal button, please. Do it tonight. Right now, you can do it and listen to me at the same time. Do it and send us a little bit of money for Secret Santa. Okay. So, excuse me, please. I'm getting over a little spring sloppiness here. But some time ago, it came to light that the Missouri Department of Revenue was scanning the documents that you take in when you go in to get either a driver's license or a CCW permit or a Missouri non-driver's ID card. You have to bring in your birth certificate and other records. If you're going for a CCW, you have to bring in the certificate from the sheriff's office. And they were scanning these and sending them into a national database. Now, if you don't know what's bad about this, aside from the fact that someone in Washington, D.C. is collecting all this information on you, hearken back to a program that the federal government started called Real ID. And the idea was that under the guise of making identification more credible, the Department of Homeland Security would gather, there would basically be a national ID, a government ID that was standardized throughout the country, a national ID. Several countries have actually tried this, a national ID, have actually used the national ID before. The two that come to mind are World War II Germany and 20th century Soviet Union, where you had national ID and you couldn't be caught on the streets without your national ID on you. And so Missouri, one of many states, said, no, we're not playing the real ID game. We're not allowing for you to come in to the citizens of the state of Missouri and put them and their personal information in some database that you could then use to track them, to monitor them, to keep them registered, to keep them in line. And in conjunction with that, there was a law passed that made it illegal for any Missouri department to gather, store, and forward information, this type of information, on any Missouri citizen to the federal government. So, it is illegal to do so. And then it came to light that the Department of Revenue was doing this. And the governor denied that this was even happening, while his minions in the Department of Revenue had to concede that it was in fact happening, but that it was no big deal. It was just, there's this company somewhere down in the Southeast that needs this information to, because they're a private contractor who actually makes the driver's license and mails it to you. Because in the Department of Revenue licensing office, they don't have the means to take a colored piece of paper and run it through a machine and laminate it on both sides and then hand it to you anymore. So they needed this company to do it, and they assured us that this company destroys these records within days. And so this went on for a while, the governor denying it, the Department of Revenue, and even after the Department of Revenue said that this is what happens, then the governor still standing up denying that any of it was going on. And then we come to find out that the Department of Revenue, which wasn't doing any of this to facilitate the Real ID program, was in fact accepting grants from the Department of Homeland Security in quid pro quo for a promise that they were coming into compliance with Real ID. So the Department of Revenue was promising the feds that they were coming in line with Real ID and were getting grants from the federal government for that. And then up comes the head of the Missouri State Highway Patrol, and he says that he has forwarded a list to the Department of Homeland Security on two occasions. And this list is not a list of ID holders. It's not even a list of driver's license holders. It is specifically a list of CCW permit holders. So you've got three different avenues now for the federal government to get its hands on lists of CCW holders. And that's what this is all about. Don't ever mistake it, okay? You've got this database being maintained by a private company out of state against Missouri law that is being made available to the feds. You've got the Department of Revenue taking grants from the Department of Homeland Security in return for promises that they will provide the information to the feds. And you've got the Missouri State Highway Patrol directly providing on two different occasions long lists of names to the feds of CCW holders. Now, all three of these agencies have violated a Missouri state law. The director of the Department of Revenue sat in Senate session giving witness testimony last week and stated point blank that he was not going to stop doing this, that this was something that was within his power to do, that he was, I guess, above the law of the state of Missouri. And so he would just continue to do this thing. So quite a bit has gone on, and there's been a lot of back and forth on this. Carl Bearden and Carrie Messer have been keeping track of what's going on. If you want to go to unitedformissouri.org.com, I guess, unitedformissouri.com, you can catch up on the blogs there as to what has happened. There's a, and we'll talk to Carl about this when he comes along, but there's a site called Wrong Way J where you can sign a petition that tells your governor that it is our expectation that he'll take care of this problem. Although it is not my expectation that he will, we need to let him know that we expect him to. And then later in the program, we'll discuss some things that Missouri Grassroots Coalition is doing to take this fine work of Carl and Terry's and turn it into on-the-ground hard work. We'll need volunteers. We'll need people to help organize this. We'll need people to help get this thing that the organization has started. We'll need people to actually go out and do some of the work. If you want to get involved as a patriot in more than just talk and blogging, if you want to actually put your feet on the ground and do something constructive and meaningful at the state level, you want to be paying attention to what's going on here with this thing. You want to get involved. And we're not asking you to run for an office. We're not asking you to hit the campaign trail and spend weeks and weeks stumping. And we're not asking you to do any public speaking. We're not asking you to do anything except give a little time, give a little effort to the things that you say are important to you. We'll get into that a little bit. And then later, we'll talk about the fair tax. I've been sold on the fair tax, of course, since it was first proposed. I read the book when it was first printed, and then I didn't stop there. I went on and studied it, studied the fair tax. I read the economics. I read what the economists were saying about it. I read the projections. I studied and followed all of the pros and cons as it's gone on for years and years and years, 10 years now, really in the limelight, more than that, as a seedling. I've watched other countries, other nations, as they approach the fair tax. I've seen what it does to their economies. This is no longer a theory. This is a fact. What fair tax can do to an economy. And there are no, I am convinced right now that there are no valid arguments against the fair tax. We'll talk a little bit about wealth envy and what that is and how that plays in consciously and subconsciously to the arguments against the fair tax. We'll talk about progressivism and degrees of progressivism and how that plays into arguments against the fair tax. We'll talk about how the fair tax actually answers the progressives' problems with the way taxes work. And we'll talk about some of the myths that surround the fair tax, and we'll do some myth busting. The fair tax is again being strangled in committee this year, but every year more and more signatories get behind it, and so it's only really a matter now of another 5 years, I'm going to say, before this thing actually comes up. We'll talk about the 16th Amendment. We'll talk about how it is imperative that we lose the 16th Amendment if we're going to have a fair tax. And then we'll talk about why we need to actually make an amendment to institute the fair tax. Of course, it's not a legal requirement that to institute the fair tax, we make an amendment because Congress is given a wide power to tax. They could just do it. It is imperative that we get rid of the 16th Amendment before we do the fair tax, because the last thing that any of us want is the fair tax alongside the income tax. But I think it's important that we do the fair tax by amendment, and we'll get into why that is. We're going to take a break, and I think when we come back, we'll have Carl Bearden, and we'll get right on into that Department of Revenue thing we've been talking about here for the last 20 minutes.
They told me that you had gone totally insane, and that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I don't see any method at all.
This is the Grassroots Minute.
After the Missouri Department of Revenue denied for weeks that public information was not given to the federal government, the Missouri Highway Patrol admits it gave the feds list of concealed carry permit holders. But the Social Security Administration, who requested it, couldn't access the information. Under Missouri law, that is private information, Missouri Senator Kurt Schaefer said. The sheer fact that the feds couldn't read the information makes the situation no better. The revelation of the information being given to the federal government has come weeks after lawmakers first began questioning the Department of Revenue's new driver's license system, which went into effect before the lists were released. The department has repeatedly denied in hearings at the Capitol that private information has not been shared with the federal government. Public Safety Director Andrea Spellers told the Senate committee that Schaefer chairs that there was no attempt whatsoever to conceal the information. Schaefer says it has taken weeks to get the information. The hearings are expected to continue. During a break in the hearing, Senator Schaefer said there could be questions of competence in the state agencies and of concealing the truth. The agencies involved fall under the purview of Governor Jay Nixon, a Democrat. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for GrassFire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. Brings you right into the studio with myself and Carl Bearden. Carl's with us. How are you, Carl?
Hey, Dave. Doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for coming. Thanks for coming. We count on you for the lowdown. You've been in Jeff City today. How are things going there?
Well, other than being soggy, the issue of the DOR scandal somewhat overshadowed, as you would imagine, by the events, tragic events in Boston. But I was here in the legislature when 9/11 took place, and we were actually in session, special session, and we debated about dismissing and going home. But we believe that the perpetrators of the attacks, who obviously at that time we didn't know who they were or what it was all about, would have won big victories if we'd done that. And so we continued on business, and that's what they're doing here in Kansas, or in Jeff City, and that's the way it should be. So they're continuing on, and particularly in relation to the DOR scandal, lots of activity is still going on with different issues of setting up statewide hearings that are going to take place over the next couple of weeks. Of course, the DOR director, who's been in office all of about 4 or 5 months, was thrown under the bus by Governor Nixon today. And so lots of activities continue to go on. You'll expect to see those again continue as the Senate takes up the budget this week.
Okay, let's just back up a little bit, Carl. And you've been on this thing since day one. So give the listeners a little bit of history all the way back to Real ID and how Missouri said no to that and what this means to that.
Right. So actually, we can go back. As I mentioned, 9/11 actually started a lot of this. And when I was still in the legislature, we did pass a requirement that you had to produce a birth certificate to prove that you were lawful presence, if you will. There was no scanning. There was no retention. It was just, here's my birth certificate with a raised ID. Well, the Bush administration had a great idea, and I'm not one of the blame Bush crowd, but in this case, they are to blame for Real ID. It was, I understand their premise behind it, but they passed a very bad federal law, which essentially creates a national ID card. Most states, or about half the states, passed statutes that prohibited compliance with a national ID card, and Missouri was one of those. So in 2009, that statute was passed as House Bill 361. It was signed into law by Governor Nixon, and it's been on the books since 2009. It says Missouri shall not, will not, comply with the national Real ID. But we found out earlier this year, late last year, that Missouri was, in fact, very quietly under the surface doing things to comply. And the way that was found out is a gentleman in Stoddard County down southeast Missouri went in to get his concealed carry permit and was asked to produce a number of documents that are not required by law, and was refused his concealed carry permit because he refused to produce the documents. And then from there, it was discovered the extent to which the state of Missouri, particularly and specifically the Department of Revenue, was in fact complying with the Real ID requirements, calling it something else, but it's Real ID nonetheless. And so it's blossomed from there.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but along the way, the Department of Revenue has accepted some grant money from the federal government as a quid pro quo for telling the federal government that they were coming into compliance with Real ID.
Right. So when this came to fore, I mean, the guy down in Stoddard County kind of tipped it, and then legislators started hearing from some of their constituents. And so there started to be questions asked in budget hearings and other hearings, and the Department of Revenue appeared before both Senate and House committees, and primarily Senate committees, and they were specifically asked, do you have any grants from Homeland Security to comply with Real ID? Their answer was no. They were asked again. The second answer was basically, well, you know, we did get some money to buy these fancy hole punches that punch void into your old license deal so that you can't use it again. And those cost $138 a piece, so we bought a bunch of those, plus some computer routers, and that's all. Well, by the time everything was said and done, it was discovered and uncovered through what Senator Schaefer, who's the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, deems the 20 Question, Act, that the Department of Revenue has not only gotten one grant, they've gotten four grants from Homeland Security, the last of which actually establishes and provides for programming the DOR computers to do biometric measurements of Missourians as they get their digital pictures taken in revenue offices. So, the whole deal with this and the problem is no one's been forthcoming. The governor has denied this has ever taken place. Now he has egg on his face. The Department of Revenue has denied they're ever doing anything. Now they have egg on their face. And now we find the Highway Patrol has been part of this by releasing the full file of all concealed carry weapons permit holders to the federal government, not once, but twice. And so the more we dig into this, the worse it is.
And so now, and that's where I was going next. So now we find out about this thing with the Missouri State Highway Patrol, and this is more than Real ID. This is actually, by narrowing the list to just CCW holders, this is a step toward gun registration.
Well, here's how all that came about. As anybody who has a concealed carry permit probably knows, you have two choices when you go in to get that. You can have that endorsement placed upon your license, which at that point you are basically making that a public record. Because under Missouri state law, concealed carry permit holders' information is a closed record. You cannot get it through a sunshine request. The public has no access to it. The press can't get it. Nobody can get it except law enforcement. And so, but if you do choose to put it on your driver's license, of which only of the 163,000 permit holders at that point in time, only 4,000 of them had chosen to do that. So instead of just giving them those 4,000 that were on the driver's license, they gave them all 163,000, and you would think, well, okay, so law enforcement, it probably went to the FBI or the CIA or Homeland Security or something. It went to the Inspector General's Office of the Social Security Administration.
Okay. Now, that's something I didn't even know that. So now we get down to, and you've been following this very closely, thank you very much, at United for Missouri. blogging on this almost daily. So fill us in then on what the current measures are being undertaken to get a handle on this.
Okay, and just before, I mean, we have been on this, but we're not the only ones. Kerry Messer with Missouri.
Oh yeah, right.
Family. I mean, but this has been a team effort. Each of us has been carrying different parts of the load, and so you can go to unitedformissouri.org, read blogs. You can go to wrongwayj.com and see videos and even more of this. But what's going on here right now in this Capitol is that the House, for example, has three different bills to address this situation. House Bill 787, for example, tightens up because what bureaucrats do, they play games with the wording of statutes. And when House Bill 361 that established that the state would not comply with Real ID, it had some language that the bureaucrats are working around. And basically what department directors and division directors have done is told their lawyers to figure out how to work around it, and they did. And that's what they've been trying to do. I don't think they haven't been successful lately, but they have told them this is how you get around the language. So they're trying to tighten up the language. So they have three bills to do that. One of the bills was heard today was Representative Kurt Barr's that would allow the removal of directors and division directors, because right now that's an issue. That's a problem. The director of revenue I mentioned earlier has resigned today. He's been there all of 4 or 5 months, has had little to do with this 4 or 5 year process, but he's the first one that the governor threw under the bus, hoping to appease the people of Missouri that something's going on. That should not and will not be satisfactory resolution to this issue, because it goes far deeper than that. And so they have those three bills going on. The Senate Appropriations Committee, through the hearings, and they've unearthed most of this information, has zeroed up the budget for the Department of Motor Vehicles under the Director of Revenue. So right now they have zero budget to spend until they start coming forth and start answering the questions that the people of Missouri want to hear. And I believe that it's likely to stay maybe not at zero, but at very, very, very reduced funding until those answers become evident to the people of Missouri. And so that means that they will probably be crippled up and through January or until they start answering questions. And there are just a number of different issues that are taking place. They've cut legal representation of the Department of Revenue because the lawyers had actually advised the division director and the department director not to promulgate rules to let the legislature or the public know that they were going to do this. And so they have taken action against the legal counsel. And I've suggested to Senator Schaefer that they do more than that they take the legal counsels away from all the departments who have their own lawyers for the Director of Revenue and Department of Public Safety and put them over in the Attorney General's office. Because the reason that's important is, just imagine, Dave, you're an attorney. I'm your department director. And I come to you and I say, look, I want to do this. Tell me how I can. And you tell me, well, I don't think you can. And I tell you, I don't think you understood the question.
Right.
And so what are you going to do? I mean, here's your boss telling you, figure it out. And if these lawyers are working for the Attorney General, it makes the Attorney General much more responsible, like he should be. And then it also provides them some independence to give them the answers that are actual answers and not what way do you want to hear it.
Okay. Are there active lawsuits going on right now over this thing?
There is at least one active lawsuit. It's down in Stoddard County. Governor Nixon has inaccurately been telling people that lawsuit was dismissed. And in fact, the only thing that happened in the past few weeks is that the judge down there did not grant an injunction that had been requested by the attorney. But as of last week, when the revelation was made that, in fact, your concealed carry weapons permit data has been released to the feds, not once but twice, that they are now taking that information back to the judge and saying, look, it's not hearsay evidence. This is documented evidence. It has happened. Grant the injunction. So hopefully that will happen this week. There are others that are talking about filing suit. As a matter of fact, the Sheriff's Association has gotten involved in this, and many sheriffs around the state are encouraging people in their jurisdictions to come and file complaints against the Department of Revenue, against Governor Nixon and others for violating their privacy rights. So that's happening across the state as well.
Good. And Now let's get back into the legislature. What in your gut is the chances that, I mean, it's late in the session. People are wanting to go home. What is the chance that some of this stuff actually makes it to the governor's desk?
I think there's a good chance. Now, what he does with it is a different question, but I think there's a very good chance he does. This issue has gotten people in this Capitol building more stimulated than anything I've seen in the past few years.
Good.
They are beside themselves. They understand the infractions and the violations of their constituents. And quite frankly, I mean, you're here, you're the Senate Appropriations Chair or the House Budget Chair. Those are pretty powerful positions, and you can't get a straight answer from a department head or a division director or even the governor's office. That in turn makes you angry, and then when your constituents aren't served, that makes you even more angry. And they're hearing from, we've had over 17,000 people sending emails in the last week to the governor and to their legislators, letting them know that this will not stand. And the legislators, to their credit, are responding to that.
Okay. I had another question for you. Would it, in your mind, I mean, you're the consummate politician in my mind, would it be better for sunshine or for keeping this thing alive if the governor did veto this and it went all the way to a override session?
Well, I think there's a good chance that he might do that. Although, you know, Jay Nixon has proven himself to be a fairly flexible, shall we say, individual. And I believe that he has been very, very poor at judging this issue in regards to how the people of Missouri are responding. He is totally out of touch on it. We'll have a video up probably in the next day or so where he literally sneers at the idea that this is even happening. And we know that he's been proven wrong. So I do believe, here's what I believe, that come March or May 17th, which is the last day of this session, that this will not go away. That will not be the end. That there will continue to be probably hearings by both the House and the Senate, whether it's an interim committee or otherwise, throughout the summer. And if there are no answers, satisfactory answers provided, which at this point I don't know that that can happen, this will continue on into next year. And so if the governor does veto the bill, which I think he should think twice about doing that, that he'll just serve to keep the thing going. You know, what the governor ought to do and what he should have done when this first came up was to say, I'm asking the state auditor to come in and do a full and comprehensive audit of the Department of Revenue. I am ordering the Department of Revenue to cease and desist whatever the new process is that they're doing until we get to the bottom of this, and we will get to the bottom of this. Instead, the governor has sneered at people who say this happened. He has ridiculed them. He's made fun of them. He's said he doesn't know. He doesn't read what the federalities write about Missouri on websites. And he even told the press, "This is not happening. You know it, and I know it." And comes to find out, it is happening, and it's happening on his watch. And it's not the first time. This governor has a record of his departments being out of control, of not controlling them. It goes back to his first term when the Department of Natural Resources hid data that on E. coli outbreak at the Lake of the Ozarks, endangering public health, hid the data from the public, hid the data from the legislature, and they had to really dig in to get that data. And what he did was similar to what happened today. He had a department head, he threw under the bus, fired him, and it went on. Same thing with the MAMTEC deal that he didn't know anything about. He doesn't run the economic. He literally said he does not run the Department of Economic Development, even though all these people report to him. We're going to buy him a Harry Truman, the buck stops here. So this is a pattern of behavior by this guy, who is not he's either a caretaker governor. He certainly is present when everything's camera ready. That's where Obama should have come to learn about shovel ready, because he's usually pretty good at knowing when shovel ready is and right there for the cameras. But he has totally underestimated what this issue means to Missourians. And whether you have a concealed carry permit or not, it is your personal data, and you cannot be assured at this point in time that your personal data is not being shared with some company or other unauthorized entity.
Wow. This is pretty amazing. You know, there's something about this name Nixon, I guess, and thinking you're above the law and that you can cover things up and get away with it. You know, back when you and I were quite a bit younger, there was a guy named Nixon who thought he could do that, huh?
I've seen this picture going around the internet today with that Nixon on one side and this Nixon on the other side, making those comparisons about cover-ups. And the more this comes out, the more you have to wonder if that's not what's going on.
Absolutely. Okay. Thanks for that, Carl. Can you stick with us for just a couple minutes after the break?
Sure.
I want to hear what you have to say to these folks out here as to what we should be doing out on the street. We're going to take this quick break, then we're going to come back. We're going to continue with Carl. We're at 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Give us a call and get in on this.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. And good does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
I'm here with Lauren Spivak, otherwise known as the Free Market Warrior. He's coming to St. Charles County April 29th and 30th at the Family Vision Library to kind of enlighten the folks on his perspective of what the free market is all about. Hi, Lauren. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Great. You'll be here in St. Charles County at the end of April for a two-night seminar from 6:30 to 10 at the Family Vision Library, 2020 Parkway Drive in St. Peter's. What is it, Lauren, that you do when you tour the country to give these seminars? What's your motivation in trying to get this done?
Well, I'm trying to help people to understand the economic reality which we seem to have lost in the last 100 years. That is to say, we used to understand what made prosperity and how America became the wealthiest country in the world. And over the course of the last 100 years, we seem to have forgotten most of that. So I'm trying to help people bring it back.
Great. So, I've spoken to some groups already trying to promote your visit here to St. Peter's. What do people come away with after two nights with you from attending the seminar?
Well, an understanding, I hope, and I think it's the case, that economics is logical. You can understand it. It's not boring. And once you start to think of things on economic terms, you get the ability to figure out, you know, what policies make sense and what they don't. And I try to leave people with enough information that they can answer their own questions from that point.
Okay, great. Lauren tours the country talking to conservative organizations about his philosophy on the free market. You can visit him here. You can see him here in St. Charles County, Missouri, April 29th and 30th at the Family Vision Library. That's 2020 Parkway Drive, St. Peter's, Missouri. You can also visit thefamilyvision.org for more information. You can get information at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And we look forward to seeing you on April 29th. Lauren, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back. We're back with Carl. Hey, listen, I don't know about you listeners out there. Well, I do know about you listeners out there. In fact, I'm about to tell you something about yourself that you may or may not realize. If you are under 120 years old, and I think that includes most of you, you have no idea what a free market is. You don't have a clue how capitalism works if you're under a century and a quarter old, because it's been that long since we in the United States of America actually had anything close to a free market and free market capitalism. it's a wonderful thing. You can read all the Adam Smith you want to, but until you've been in an environment where prosperity is allowed to flourish, you just can't have a clue how it really all works for the good of everyone, rich, poor, black, white, politician, non-politician, man, woman, everybody. If I was in that position, and you are, I would want to go and hear Lauren Spivak talk about free markets. I'd want to go to St. Charles on April 29th and 30th to the Family Vision Library and maybe just start. Maybe that'll just be a beginning of you learning what it is we're missing out on here. Okay, we're back with Carl. And Carl, this really is getting the dander up of a lot of people, but the average person, I mean, I've read a couple of things actually on the internet that says, you know, I'm just absolutely over the top pissed off about this, and I don't know what can I do? What can the average person do? Tell me, can I go to the Department of Revenue to get either my CCW or my driver's license or my state ID card and say, no, I am not going to let you take these papers out of my hand. Here are the things that I am required by law to give you and let you see, and you give me my license now.
You cannot do that today. They will not allow you to do it. You know, and remember, all the fee offices you go to are contractors.
Right.
And so contractors have been directed to collect these. My wife went in this week, last week actually, to get her concealed carry permit. And she was prepared for them. She wasn't going to give it to them, although she had her birth certificate or passport or whatever with her and so forth, and had quite the go-round with them. And, of course, a lot of these are just employees at the fee offices, and they're just doing what they're told. But you cannot today get your driver's license renewed, your concealed carry permit, unless you're going to one of the few offices that have not yet been converted. There are a few offices around the state that have not been converted to the new system, and if you go to one of those, you can do this without having all this rigmarole. But by May 15th, those are all going to be converted and all be gone. So if you want to real quickly find out who those are, then you'll have to call around and find out. But you need to be contacting your legislator. You can do that by going to wrongwayj.com. You can look at all the information. You know, we don't do anything that we don't back up. We provide links. We provide videos. We provide everything to what we say. But there's a tab on wrongwayj.com that says Email J. You can do that. It'll send an email to the governor. It'll send an email to your legislator. And now I've got to change it because Brian Long's gone. I've got to send it to the deputy director now. But that's one way to do it, and they are getting those. And they have, I would bet, I haven't asked them, but I would bet that this is the largest email response for anything that they've ever gotten. You can also call your legislator. They're easy to look up at the house.mo.gov or senate.mo.gov website. Put your address in, and I'll tell you who your legislator is and give you the phone number. We've had an average of at least 50 calls a day from our commercials coming into the House. Letting them know that people disapprove of what's going on. So you get active. There are going to be four hearings across the state in the next couple of weeks, starting this weekend. Those will be publicized. If they have not released them this afternoon, they'll release them first thing in the morning. So they'll be Springfield, Kansas City, and Cape Girardeau, and St. Charles. So you'll have an opportunity to come out and let the legislative committees know that what's going on is unacceptable. So lots of opportunities. The fact of the matter is you must get involved if you want to make a difference.
And this is it, folks. This is your chance. I mean, you've been sitting out here. You've been all bottling up this anger from the primaries and all bottling up all this anger from the general election, and you've been just watching things go bad and bad and bad, and you've been told, and you know it for a fact, that if you want to make a difference, You're going to have to do it at the state level. The federal government is gone. We're going to have to win the federal government back from the state on up. And the first step in that is for states to say no to the federal government. The Real ID Act was the way that the state of Missouri said no. And now you've got a state government that is gone off on its own and decided that it is above the law, that it is above this law, or that it can find ways around this law. And so this is the chance for you to get out and do something to make a difference. You've been looking for that opportunity. You've been looking for that one thing that you could wrap your arms around and feel like you've been doing something. This is it. This should bring some people down. This thing should bring some high-level people down. What's up with the attorney general that we're not getting something? I mean, isn't he the people's lawyer, Carl?
Well, he is, and that's a good question. There have been a number of people asking him that question. I believe tomorrow he'll get an opportunity, if he's in his office, to answer that question from some reporters. So he should be protecting us. That's what his job is when there's a violation. Even if he doesn't think there's one, he should at least do an investigation. You know, what's going on with these Senate and House committees is they do have limited authority to investigate. They have some subpoena power, which they've used for the first time in 23-some-odd years. But the Attorney General has the authority and the power to get to the bottom of this very quickly. And he needs to do that, you know, if nothing else, to disprove what's being said is wrong. But so far, everything's been said has been proven right.
So now, you know, if it's the federal government, if you're in Washington, D.C., and you've got something like, whatever it was, the thing that Bill and Hillary were, Whitewater, or you've got some Monica Lewinsky thing going on, or you've got some Watergate thing going on, and the legislature doesn't think that the president or the administration is able to, because of partisan politics, investigate itself, the administrative branch of government, they'll appoint a special prosecutor. Can the Missouri state legislature do that?
They don't have the authority to do that. They have to pass a law, which would require the governor's signature, so they don't really have the authority to do that. So the attorney general has that power. I mean, there really should be no need for the legislature to have to do anything in that regard. The attorney general has the authority, has the power, has a responsibility to get to the bottom of this for the people of Missouri.
Okay, so people could email him as well, couldn't they?
That's correct.
They could, call him.
Email him, call him. He's on the website. You can look him up very quickly and give him a call and ask him what's going on.
Okay, Carl, thanks. And we may call on you again in the future to keep us posted on this. You folks out there, go to tell us the name of your website there again, Carl.
You can go to unitedfrommissouri.org, and we keep you updated on this issue and Medicaid expansion and other issues. But specifically on this issue, you can also go to wrongwayj.com, and we have it easy for you to weigh in and to let the governor or your legislator know what's happening is totally unacceptable.
Yes, and United for Missouri, and what's Carrie's website?
That's Missouri Family Network.
.org, right?
I think it's .com. I don't recall now. But if you put Missouri Family Network in or search it, you'll come up with this. So he has some good running updates on that as well.
Okay. And I get in a plug for Carl here. He's been doing an awful lot aside from this thing, which has sidetracked us to the governor's benefit, I guess, from talking about the expansion of Medicare, Medicaid. Carl's done a lot of work with that, too, so we appreciate that. That's unitedfrommissouri.org, and when you go there, sign up to get blasts when Carl does his blogs every day, and you can stay on top of things as they develop. We'll have Carl back from time to time, maybe about this and maybe about the Medicaid expansion. We always appreciate his insight. He spends an awful lot of time up in Jeff City actually doing things that we don't have the time or the knowledge sometimes to do. And we appreciate that, Carl. We appreciate United for Missouri, and I appreciate you being here tonight. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having us on. Appreciate your support.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Carl Bearden. Carl was a legislator. He's been up to Jefferson City. He knows the ins and outs there, and there's not really a better source to go to for what is happening. He actually was up at the Capitol today talking to people, and he knows what's going on there. So we got him on, and we heard about what's going on. We're going to come back in just a minute, and we're going to talk about some of the things that Missouri Grassroots Coalition is putting together. They're still in their infancy stage, things are going to get really active. We're going to try very, very hard to get more and more people involved in on-the-ground work with this thing. So we're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back and we'll deal with some of that. And then we'll move on to the fare tax. 347-677-1835.
You run the book with a movie in mind.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
You can't handle the truth!
We're back, and we can handle the truth. We can sure dish it out here. We've just spent some time with Carl Bearden talking about the abuses by the government of the state of Missouri with your private data, with your CCW data, with your with all of the data that you're required to turn over to the state now to get your driver's license, your non-driver's ID card, or your CCW permit. There's another bill moving through the legislature right now that actually divorces CCW from the driver's license completely, that you don't actually, if this bill passes, and it has a good chance of passing as well, I'm given to understand, that says all you need to get your CCW permit, that the certificate you get from the sheriff is your CCW permit. You don't go to the Department of Revenue now and do anything. The certificate you get from the sheriff is, in fact, your CCW permit. So that would keep a little bit of that data out of the hands of anybody that doesn't need it. Carl mentioned that this is the most riled up he's seen people in Jefferson City in quite some time. I think it's the most riled up I've seen the groups of us folk down here, the patriot groups, the people of the state of Missouri, just to prove how riled up people are in Jefferson City. Let's talk about for just 2 seconds about the likelihood in a normal session that any bill introduced as lately in the session as some of these bills that we've been talking about tonight are introduced have of even passing. So the fact that these people are introducing bills this late in the session that have good chances of passage is an indicator of what Carl was talking about, that these people are hot about this in Jefferson City. Now, if you're hot about this, I want to just kind of talk about some of the things that we're doing. Carrie Messer who Carl mentioned, has put together a series of flyers and some petitions. And so what we're going to do at Missouri Grassroots Coalition is we're going to try with you to be the feet on the ground of this thing. We're going to get copies of these flyers. We're going to take them out to licensing offices, and we're going to stand there and hand them out and answer people's questions about what's really going on here. We're going to encourage people to civil disobedience. Civil disobedience has always been a great tool. It was a great tool for the civil rights movement. Before that, it was a great tool for the patriots who went into the Boston Harbor and shoved the tea overboard. And so we're going to suggest that people go to the DOR and refuse to let go of their documents. Go there with the documents. Go there with the documents that you're supposed to have. Show them to the people and say, this is what I'm required by law in the state of Missouri to show you to get my driver's license, my ID card, my CCW. And refuse to turn those things over. And then make it clear that you're going to drive with or without your driver's license, that you have fulfilled every bit of the law, that you have done everything that is required of you, and that you're going to drive with or without a driver's license, that you're going to carry with or without a permit, that you're going to... you know, I don't guess you're going to buy beer with or without an ID card, but the other thing that we're going to need is some people to actually circulate these petitions. And these petitions, as I understand it, I haven't seen them yet, are petitions to force the Attorney General into action. So we'll have more details on this upcoming. But what we need is for you to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and email us. You can email me, David Court, DAVIDCORT, at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. You can email info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and volunteer. Let us know that you are willing to help in this thing to whatever extent you can. We're not asking anybody to sweat blood. We're not asking anybody to. We want you to help in direct proportion to the amount of pissed off that you are about this thing. We're going to get some action rolling. We're going to have more details on that by Wednesday. We'll have full details on this by next Monday's show. We'll have this thing organized and ready to roll. But we need to know from you that you are ready and willing to help out with this. A good email is info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. You can email me directly, David Court@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and let us know that you're ready and willing to participate. Okay. One of the biggest problems in the United States of America in the last 100 years, and increasingly so as we've gone from that point 100 years ago to a point today, is the one thing that gets in the way of us getting to a tax structure. We need tax. There's been a we need some tax. I mean, you know, we've got a Department of Defense that defends the country. We've got a chief executive that needs to be paid. We've got some legislators that need to be paid. Yes, they're overpaid. They don't need all the bennies that they get. They don't need all the largesse that gets heaped up on them. But they do need to get paid. We got to pay the light bills in Washington, D.C. You know, there are things that have to be paid for. We got to buy paper clips for the Secretary of Defense. And so we need some revenue. The federal government needs some revenue. So taxation becomes a necessary evil. And we can argue forever about how much tax is needed. We certainly overspend today. No one's going to argue that. We certainly spend too much money. We certainly tax to the point of stealing money from one person to give it to another person. We are overtaxed. We are overspent. But none of that addresses the fairness of our tax. The 16th Amendment was part of the downfall of capitalism as we knew it. It was part of the unraveling of the economy. And the 16th Amendment, if you're not aware, was the amendment that taxed income. What we have now is a system that plays right into the wealth envy of some lower class people, and also plays into the corporate greed, I guess, of some of the wealthy people. You've created this system that in and of itself is the root cause of class warfare in the country, and that is the tax system. You've got a system that openly penalizes wealthy people, that openly penalizes success, and this gives poor or middle class progressives some kind of feeling of vindictiveness, some kind of feeling of having gotten even, some kind of feeling of putting the thumb on the big bad guy. Generally in this country, and I don't know why, generally in this country, there is an envy by people who don't have $1 million of people who do have $1 million. And to rationalize this envy, they come up with all kinds of, he's got too much, he didn't earn that, he doesn't deserve that. First of all, let's explode that myth. There is not a dime of privately held money that wasn't earned. There's not a dime of privately held money that wasn't earned. If you're an art thief, you worked for your money. It may not be right, it may not be honest, but there isn't a dime of privately held money that wasn't earned. I don't want to hear the stories about the grandkids of Sam Walton. Maybe the grandkids of Sam Walton didn't earn all their money, but every dime they have was earned money and rightfully belongs to the person who earned it and their heirs. It is that simple. So you can be all upset because someone has something you don't have, but never, ever get caught in the trap of trying to justify your own envy of rich people by suggesting that they have some money they didn't earn. They do not. Now, when we get to that, then, what we have is we've laid bare your selfish envy of wealthy people. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't know me, I don't have $1 million. If you don't know me, I'm going to tell you I don't have $500,000. But I made a conscious decision. I've got a pretty good brain. I'm a really good student. I'm a fast learner. I can multitask. And I made a conscious decision some half a century ago what I was going to do with my life. And I did it. And I believe I knew when I made that decision that I was not going to end my life with $1 million in the bank. And I believe I knew when I made that decision that I was not going to be a person of renown, a person that everyone knew, and a person that people envied. But I made that decision. Now, somewhere along the line, if you don't have $1 million in the bank at my age, you made a decision. And that decision, whether you made it knowingly or not, is why you don't have $1 million in the bank. You don't get to, in my mind, wake up in the morning, have your cup of coffee, sit around and read the newspaper, slide into your jeans and your khaki shirt, go down to the loading dock, load the trucks, come home, kiss your wife, play with your kids, sit down and watch Dancing with the Stars and the baseball game, go to bed, while you get up every morning and watch your next door neighbor go to work at 4 o'clock, come home at 6 or 7 in the evening, give up his family, give up his life, never go to the beach, never have a Saturday off, and then you get to sit around and bitch because he's got $1 million and you don't. And you don't get to use the government to steal his money and give it to someone who made conscious decisions not to do the things that he did to have $1 million in the bank. That is the income tax system. That is the system that has to be done away with. That is the system that tells this guy next door to you, we're going to slap you silly for earning so damn much money because we're jealous as hell that we didn't get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go to work 15 hours a day so we could earn that much money. We're jealous as hell that you worked your ass off, that you gave up everything that we considered important, that you put money in the bank and saved, that you were successful, and we're going to penalize you for all that success. That is the income tax system. That is the system put in place by the 16th Amendment. And that very system is the system that opponents of the fair tax want to hang on to. Now you're going to hear all kinds of halfway measures that purport to, you know, I've got a great friend. And he is. He's a very intelligent guy. He is a very good friend. I consider him a very good friend. But his suggestion is that we stop taxing anyone who makes less than $100,000 a year and that we keep the graduated income tax for people who make over $100,000 a year. Well, what is the difference? Right now, let's just look at the current tax system. Right now, if you're a family of five and you make $70,000 a year, you already don't pay any damn tax. I mean, if you've got any brains at all and you make $70,000 a year in a family of five, you already don't pay any tax. I mean, you got your 401k. You got your cafeteria plan. You got your tax-free shelters. You got your write-off for three kids. You've got your child tax credit. You've got your education credit. You've got your home mortgage credit. You already don't pay any tax. So what's the difference between let's not tax anybody over $100,000 or under $100,000 and what we have today? What is the difference in the gut-wrenching jealousy that a person who wants to tax everyone who makes over XYZ amount and not tax anyone who makes under XYZ amount, what is the difference between the jealousy that they have for that wealthy person and anybody who's advocating today's income tax system? I mean, if you know the answer to that, give me a call at 347-677-1835 and let's bounce this around a while. I'm always open to suggestions, but I haven't heard any that answer the fairness issue. Now, let's understand what we need to do here is for the rest of the time that we're discussing this, and it's going to be weeks now, we're going to have to think of a better name for the fair tax than the fair tax. But and not because the fair tax isn't fair. The fair tax, as proposed, is the fairest thing that's hit this nation since the day it was born. But because fair, when you hear it, is always what you think fair is. Fair is always the way you think it ought to be. I mean, if you're a progressive, you think the current system is fair. You think the system that charges the current system the way it's supposed to be, you think is fair. The current system, the way it's played, you don't think is fair. You don't think that Warren Buffett should pay less income tax than his secretary, but you think that Warren Buffett should pay more tax than his secretary by not being allowed to declare an income of less than his secretary, because he can declare all of his other earnings as something that's not taxable or that's taxable at a lower rate. But the bottom line there is you think Warren Buffett should pay more tax as a percentage of his income than his secretary. And you call that fair. You know, if you are an advocate of a flat tax where a person who makes $100 pays $10 and a person that makes $1 million pays $100,000, then you think that's fair. It's not. If you think that anybody who makes less than $1 million should not ought to pay any tax, and that everybody who makes over $1 million ought to pay 75% of everything they make in tax, if you think that's the way we'd ought to finance the country because you hate millionaires that much, then that's going to be your definition of fair. So we need to avoid the word fair. We need to call this a national consumption tax. And we'll just quit calling it a fair tax. The national consumption tax is a tax, for you who don't know, on everything that is sold new. It's going to be a 23% sales tax on everything that's sold. Now, gosh, that sounds like a lot. God, I only pay the state of Missouri 6%, and that seems astronomical. 23%, that's 23 cents of every dollar. That means if I buy something for $100, it's going to cost me $123. It means if I buy something for $1,000, it's going to cost me $1,230. That just seems astronomical. Now, remember, this tax is going to replace every other tax you pay. You already pay. Take out your pay stub. Social Security tax? gone with the national consumption tax. Medicaid tax, Medicare tax, gone. Gone with the national consumption tax. Federal excise tax, gone. Gone with the national consumption tax. That cigarette tax, gone. That income tax, gone. So, if you go to work for 40 hours and your agreed wage is $10 an hour, how much of that $400 a week should you bring home? What do you bring home now? About $320? You got no kids? About $304? Not married? About $298? If you work 40 hours for $10 an hour, why in the hell shouldn't you bring home $400? Well, under the national consumption tax, that's exactly what you'll bring home, $400. Now, when you go buy a $100 item, it's going to cost you $123. But you're bringing home $400 a week. So an extra $23 for the $100 item is nowhere near the $100, the 25% of your money that they're keeping before they even hand it to you at the end of the week. Further, if at the end of the week you've got to pay the rent, you can forego the $100 item. At the end of the week, now, if you have to pay the rent, you don't get to say, I have to pay the rent, so give me my whole $400. You can always pay the tax next week on that $100 item. You can refuse to pay the tax on that $100 item completely if you don't want to. So, part of the beauty of the national consumption tax is that you get to keep what you make. You get to keep control of your money. You get to decide what taxes you're going to pay and what taxes you're not going to pay. You get to decide with your $400 what's important to you. The government doesn't decide it for you. Nobody decides it for you. If you want to give $300 to charity, you can do so. If you want to spend $200 on a video game, you do so. If you want to buy food, you do so. If you don't want to buy food, you don't so. It's just that simple. And this is part of the antagonism that a progressive, and especially a progressive in government, has toward the fair tax, is you controlling your own money. Because remember, for a progressive, for an Obamaite, for a socialist, you don't even have any money. All of everybody's money belongs to everyone else. Any socialist, progressive, liberal that you talk to, that's the mantra you get. And they don't like the national consumption tax because suddenly your money belongs to you. Now, once you get this $400 home, and you've decided to spend it on something, what will you spend it on? Well, you're going to have some food. Yeah. You're going to have some clothing. You're going to have some gas for your car. Maybe you have to have a car. What is being done to make sure that the rich man pays more for a car than you do under the national consumption tax. In other words, how do we make sure that the rich guy gets penalized? That's the next question you're going to hear from an opponent of the fair tax. You're going to hear it in all kinds of different dialects. You're going to hear it in all kinds of different syntax. But basically, the question is, how do we go about now screwing the rich guy? How are we going to do that? And one of the main ways you're going to hear this is, okay, this is a tax that absolutely kills poor people. This is a tax that absolutely hurts the working poor, because they spend most of their income on food and on clothing and on gasoline. And the rich guy spends most of his income on yachts and jets and $2 million weddings. Well, the fact of the matter is that when this is all said and done, because of that, the rich guy is still paying a heck of a lot more tax than the poor guy. And the fact that they both pay the same percentage of tax should make those people who would go for a flat tax happy. Except for what? Except for what? What does the flat taxer, who is really the conservative progressive, the progressive in conservative clothing, what is a flat taxer not happy about with the fact that the national sales tax is flat? What is he not happy about when it comes to the fact that the poor guy buying a loaf of bread pays 23% tax, and the rich guy buying a $1 million yacht pays 23% tax? Why is the flat taxer not happy with that? Because it's not a tax on what? Income. Income. He wants the rich guy's taxes change to the rich guy's income. And he wants the poor guy's taxes chained to the poor guy's income, so that he can continue to penalize people for how much they make, for how successful they are. And then we get down to, how are we going to make sure that the rich guy is doing his share to take care of the poor guy? That is the root argument of the wealth envious. That is the root argument. Whether they couch that in fair share, whether they couch that in poor people who have to choose between medicine and food, however they couch that, that is the root of the argument. How do we take money away from the rich guy and give it to the poor guy? And I'm going to tell you right up front, under the national consumption tax, we hope to get to a point where we don't. But to put your mind at ease, the national consumption tax is revenue neutral. That is, at 23% of all of the money spent in the United States on taxable goods, exactly the same amount of money is going to be raised next year as was raised last year. So, that said, for the time being, it does nothing to address spending. It does nothing to address the fact that there are still going to be hundreds of millions of people living off the rich. There are still going to be hundreds of millions of people getting food stamps. There are still going to be hundreds of millions of people getting housing allowance, housing assistance. There are still going to be hundreds of millions of people getting free lunches. There are still going to be hundreds of millions of people getting free medicine. There are still going to be hundreds of millions of people getting free doctors. There are still going to be hundreds of millions of people getting welfare checks. There are still going to be hundreds of millions of people getting SSI payments. So, put an end to the argument right now when you hear it that the fare tax is going to hurt the poor guy. The only thing that's going to hurt the poor guy is when we cut spending. And when we cut spending, it is going to initially hurt those people who have become so dependent on the federal government that they can't live without it. That, in a nutshell, is what Wealth Envy is all about. It is, how do we get our hands on that guy's money? How the hell do I get my hands on his money? And sadly, the fare tax, the national consumption tax, the national sales tax, does nothing about that problem. But then neither does a tax on people making over $100,000 a year. Neither does an increased corporate tax. Neither does a flat tax. The only thing that's ever going to take care of those problems is dealing with spending. And the tax system, regardless of what it is, does nothing about spending. That's about all we're going to deal with tonight on the fare tax. That's enough to bite off. But we're going to continue talking probably in the last hour of our show for the foreseeable future about the fare tax. We started that off today because today's tax day. If you want to follow along with this and haven't done so, go to Barnes & Noble, go to Amazon.com, go anywhere and pick up the fare tax book. It'll kind of be our text. And so that's where we'll go. From here, we'll start talking about the fare tax and its inception as an idea, and then we'll work our way into how it works. I've read the book. I've studied the fare tax quite a bit. I talked to a lot of people about the fare tax. I was deep into 999 as part of the Herman Cain campaign, so I'll be glad to answer any questions you have if you want to call any week at 347-677-1835. If you want to tweet me at the courthouse, if you want to email me, davidcourt@missourigrassrootscoalition.org, we'll get your question and we'll get it on the air and we'll get it answered. We're going to deal with this fare tax as in-depth as we possibly can so that maybe some of those people who are totally ignorant about it, you know, and that is the thing that I want to say before we quit for tonight. I don't have a problem discussing with you your objections to the fare tax or your proposals for something different, as long as you approach the discussion with some kind of knowledge. But I find myself arguing in favor of the fare tax with people who have absolutely no idea what they're arguing against. They've picked up a talking point here or there from a friend or from a reliable talk show host, and that's what they go with. Pick up the book, read the damn book, digest the book, understand the system and how it works and why it's important that in my mind that it worked that way, and then come and make your case. That's all. Don't come to me with half-ass arguments that are weak talking points that you picked up somewhere along the way. The fair tax doesn't hurt the poor. And if you know how the fair tax works, you understand that. The fair tax isn't a regressive tax. And if you understand how the fair tax works, you know that. Now, you can still make some arguments against the fair tax, but don't come to me and say it's a regressive tax, because it's not. And if you study it and still have some objection to it, come and let's argue those things intellectually. But know what you're talking about when you come to the table. That's all I ask. And any of the next several weeks that we talk about this, you can bring your objections on board and we'll deal with them. And I encourage you to try to change my mind on this. Listen now. We'll be back, of course, next Monday with another version of the Hour of Truth. We thank Carl Bearden for being with us tonight, for bringing us up to date on what's going on with the Missouri Department of Revenue. We thank you for being along and for listening. Don't forget to make it out to the Family Vision Library on April 29th and 30th and catch that Free Market Warrior talking about capitalism and the restoration of free markets in the United States of America. Don't forget to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org to check on the Secret Santa, click on the Secret Santa tab at the top, to click on the PayPal link on that page, and to send a couple of bucks to Missouri Grassroots Coalition Secret Santa program. On Tuesday night, every week, along comes the great, the powerful, the ever funny, but ever pointed Cynthia Davis with Homefront. A great show. If you haven't caught one yet, you need to do so. And you can always go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the MGC radio page and catch any podcast of any past program. But be sure and tune in tomorrow night at 7 o'clock and catch Cynthia live. She's always happy to have your call-ins. Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager, the culture vigilante, comes along, and she'll be talking about everything conservative, everything cultural. She's a homeschooling mom, so she's way into all the education things. And Lisa's on every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Thursday night at 7 o'clock, Kevin Harned, the hillbilly, comes along with a lot of hillbilly logic. You want to talk about a funny show, you want to talk about an informative show, that's Kevin and Hillbilly Logic. And then, of course, every Monday night, we're back with the Hour of Truth. I don't know what's on store for next Monday. We'll see. I hadn't planned on the Department of Revenue being on store for this Monday. We were going to spend the whole 2 hours on the fair tax, but this came up. We thank Carl for coming along and for being with us. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Bring your group along. Join in with us. Be prepared for details on our feet on the ground move to get something done about this Department of Revenue thing. Be sure and catch Cynthia Tuesday, Lisa Wednesday, Kevin Thursday, Secret Santa. Secret Santa at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. I'm Dave. This is the Hour of Truth, and we're going to say goodnight. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.